Good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you for joining in. Thank you so much for being with here this day with us. We really enjoy doing this during lunch hour. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Veronica Alvarez, and I work for Partner Research Network. And today we are going to have a very great presentation about when you are having a divorce and you also have a family member, a loved one with a disability. But before we start with that, I'm going to talk a little bit about our agency. So, Partner Resource Network is the Parent Training and Information Center for Texas. We are the PTI. We are funded by the Department of Education, specifically the Office of Special Education, to provide free resources and parents of children with disabilities, youth with disabilities that we call themselves advocates. Our mission is to empower and support Texas families and individuals impacted by disabilities, who we serve, as I mentioned, parents of children with disabilities, youth with disabilities, from the age of 0 to 26. So from birth to 26. So we help families in babies, ECI babies, school age students, and transition to adulthood and a little bit on adults with disabilities until they are 26. Where we serve, Partner Research Network was first funded in 1986, and now we have four projects serving Texas. So we are in all the state of Texas. I'm part of the team project. As you can see in the map, the red area is the team project. So that's Austin, San Antonio, and Rio Grande Valley area. We are the same Partner Resource Network, but we have different projects, different directors, but it's the same thing. We have more than 20 regional coordinators across Texas. Our services are free, and we offer parent workshops, youth workshops, webinars, information and referrals, one-on-one technical assistance, support and our meetings and IEP clinics. We do once a year a big symposium, each regional coordinator. We also have parent leadership trainings and youth leadership trainings. We can help you access to social media resources. So for today, some housekeeping items. Your camera and your microphone is off. So if you have a question, please type it in the chat box or in the Q&A, and we are going to be monitoring that and helping you with those questions. This webinar is being recorded, and we are going to post it later on in our Facebook page. And also, Consolidated Planning Group has a YouTube channel where they have this recording in that page. A reminder, at the end of this presentation, you are going to receive a survey. Help us with that. We really appreciate your feedback, how to improve our presentations, and also to report to our grant. And with this, we can continue giving you guys free trainings and continue with our grant. We have to report through these evaluations. We do not provide CEUs, but we can do a certificate of attendance. If you need one, please type it in the chat box, and I can give you one certificate of attendance. So again, this is my name, my phone number, my email, our webpage. Please visit our webpage. We have a lot of information. I already put that information in the chat box if you need it. This is our prior director of team project. And as I mentioned, we have coordinators in region one. We have Maria in region 20. That's San Antonio. We have Perla, and I'm here in Austin in region 13. All right, I think that's all I have to share with you. So now let me introduce you to Alison Chabert. She is a financial planner. We Consolidated Planning Group, and also we have Mary Ann Hughes. She's a certified special needs divorce coach, and we have Mike Day. He's an attorney, and he specializes in family law. So thank you so much, guys, to being with us today, talking to our audience ab about this important topic.
Thank you, Veronica, for having us here today. We are happy to be back with you once again. For the folks that are here that have joined many of our webinars in the past, welcome back. We're glad you're here. For those that are attending for the first time, we're glad you found us. As Veronica mentioned earlier, Consolidated Planning Group has a YouTube channel out there, and there are over 500 webinars on planning for special needs. If you can think of a topic, it is out there. And that YouTube channel was just born out of my own frustration as a parent on how hard everything is when it comes to planning for a loved one with a disability. So the webinars that we have are really designed to empower you and give you the tools and resources that you need to be successful on your planning journey with your loved one. The topics include such things as special needs trust, guardianship, public benefits such as SSI and Medicaid, Medicaid waivers, you name it, it's out there. We even had a webinar with Temple Grandin. So there's a lot of stuff out there, and we've tried to title them in such a manner so you can really search for kind of the step that you're on in the journey. So, Consolidated Planning Group, we are a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We're nationally certified as Social Security advisors and members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. Our whole firm is nuanced in working with families who have a loved one with a disability. We do a lot of advocacy by way of webinars. We help set up lifetime protection plans, transition planning. We set up ABLE accounts, and we stand ready to help you in your planning journey. There's about 260,000 financial advisors in the US, and about 125 to 150 total have any background in special needs. So it's really important when you have a loved one with a disability that you do work with a specialist. It's critically important that we have money in the right buckets to preserve eligibility for state and federally funded programs. And I know Mike and I have had many conversations on various clients and trying to get things straight so that way we don't lose Medicaid or we don't lose SSI or some of those eligibility criteria that are so critically important. So we help with all of that. So today, I guess the first thing that I would like to say is I'm sorry you're here. So, because if you're going through divorce, you're in the middle of divorce, recently got divorced, or it's on the horizon, what we all know, Mike, Marianne, myself, this is a very, very stressful time, for you. And when we have a loved one with a disability, there's already a long list of complexities that happen in our life. And then when we kind of throw in crisis and other things that go along with the person with the disability, along with crisis in our life, such as divorce, it's tough. And so the first thing that I want to say, I am sorry that you're here, but for anybody that's in the middle of this and it's really, really bad and you can't see light at the end of the tunnel, the light does come. So that's the first thing that I wanted to say. And the more that you plan and you kind of learn about what your resources are out there and how to, I think about like dialectical behavior therapy, DBT. Are you thinking with your emotional brain or your rational brain? And when it comes to planning and thinking about divorce, the rational part of it is the best part, and kind of staying calm and having a plan and working your plan and things like that. And that's the cheaper way to go about it, because the emotional way to go about things starts getting really, really expensive. And so anyway, I just want to say hang in there, because if you can't see light at the end of the tunnel, it does come. Sometimes it takes longer than what you had hoped. And you are going to be in for a treat from hearing from Attorney Mike Day. And also Marianne Hughes, who's a certified special needs divorce coach. And Marianne gets it. She has kids with disabilities herself, has gone through this. And so there's a lot of great information that's going to be shared today. So having said that, I would like to turn it over to the two of you. And thanks for being back with us again today.
Thank you so much, Allison. It's an honor to be here today. Thanks for having us and for the great introduction. Divorce is a scary time, especially when you have a child with a disability and are overwhelmed with everything you have to do to get through the divorce, as well as plan for your child during and after divorce in terms of what they're going to need to survive and be successful in the future. And so I am honored to be able to share my experiences and what I went through, and to help other people who are also facing similar challenges. I'm now known as a special needs divorce expert, honored to be a thought leader in the field, but it didn't start out that way. That wasn't my intent to become a divorce coach. I myself, as Allison mentioned, I'm the mom of two kids on opposite ends of the autism spectrum, and I found myself about 5 years ago facing divorce. Wasn't something I saw coming, but I knew I had to put my kids first and figure out how to advocate for them and for myself in the process. It was a long, hard road getting there. I finally did get a great result for my family, but it took a lot of time, money, and effort. And so I didn't want others to go through the same. That's why I started Special Family Transitions, to be able to help people get there in a better fashion and save the resource and for their kids instead of spending it on the divorce. And so now, in addition to being a special needs divorce coach, I've also had training as a mediator, parenting coordinator, and arbitrator. So what that means is, in addition to being a coach and supporting one parent, I can have a different perspective and work with both parents if that's the best way to go, to figure out how to work together and have those conversations that need to be done in the best way possible. Also, an honor to work with different professionals. As a co-director of the National Association of Divorce Professionals Special Needs Chapter, I'm able to connect with different resources, learn about all the different aspects, from financial to legal to everything that needs to be done, mental health areas, and then connect people with experts in the different locations. I'm able to work with people across the country, so definitely I've got resources to be able to help you no matter where you're located. And I share a lot of information for free out there on podcasts such as this, magazine articles, and different events. And so a lot of information is out there already, but definitely happy to help you kind of get through this process based on your situation.
Yeah. First of all, my name's Mike Day. I am a board certified in family law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization. It's an honor to be invited to speak today. I have a real special place in my heart for folks who are going through the divorce process with a child with special needs. I've handled a lot of these cases, and I know that you have all the sort of underlying tensions and complexities of divorce. And then when you kind of layer that on with a child with special needs, it can be overwhelming as an understatement. So my hope today is that, we'll get to share some information, and if nothing else, the greater knowledge will kind of dampen the anxiety a little bit. With that, let's kind of go to what we're going to do is we're going to kind of talk about two cases at either end of the continuum. We have Jill and John, who have a 6-year-old medically complex child, Jane. But even though Jill and John are going through a divorce, it's amicable, all things considered. And then on the other end of the continuum, you have Donna and David. They have an 18-year-old autistic child named Drew. And Donna and David are regrettably in a high conflict situation. There's just a lot of tension, and typically with high conflict comes more litigation. So why don't we start by talking about the preparation, thinking about the process. The first thing you want to do is you want to understand what your ultimate goals are. Now, for most folks, it is to have a some financial stability and some protection of their children. And the children's protection involves not just financially, but also emotionally. And Mary Ann, can you share a little bit about, how you get your clients prepared from the perspective of a divorce coach and figuring out what their ultimate goals are?
Right. So I help people get from the emotion side of divorce to the business side of divorce. So I come from a business background, and that's how I like to approach it. granted, there's a lot of emotions and things going on that we need to process and think about, but we don't want that to take the forefront of the decisions that we make. We don't want to rush to make decisions. We don't want to rush to get a bulldog attorney, as some people might call them. I just was on a saw a post today on Facebook where somebody was blindsided. They have been married 25 years, and I can tell you 99% of those people on that thread said, go out and get yourself the most aggressive attorney you can. I responded and said, you know, getting an attorney is important, but before you do that, make sure that you think about what's important to you, what you want your future to look like, and kind of take time. You don't have to rush to do anything. You know, take time to understand what's important to you. Take time to be in a better place to make good decisions and have a conversation with, for when you do meet with an attorney, and figure out how that's going to affect you and your kids going forward. So the best advice I received when I was first going through divorce was slow down, take your time, and don't rush to anything, because decisions that we make now and a divorce are going to affect us for a lifetime. We want to do this the right way with the right professionals so that we're making the best decisions we can and the outcome that we'll have for our kids in terms of, as Allison and Mike, you know, are going to talk about, how that affects their benefits going forward as well.
Yeah. So, and if there's any takeaways from today's presentation for the audience, it's questions that you should ask when you're thinking about what professionals you want to add to your team. And so, you know, we have the little bulldog there. It's, of course, it's a French bulldog, right? It's not necessarily what you think about. Because people say, I want a bulldog. Well, you know, what you really want is you want someone who's going to be effective. You want someone who knows the law about special needs, both certainly from a family law perspective, but also you're going to want someone to help you out on the estate planning side. And so as you are assembling your team, one of the things that you want to ask prospective lawyers is about temporary orders, right? Because family law litigation, divorce in particular, one of the things that makes it really different from, say, a car wreck case or a medical malpractice case is that what happens in the very beginning oftentimes can determine greatly what happens in the rest of the case, right? And so when you look at the temporary orders phase, that will happen within the first 60 days of filing, right? Because you're in all likelihood expected to go to mediation. You will need to be prepared for mediation. And so what temporary orders looks like is it's basically two questions. One, what does the status quo look like? And then two, is there something problematic with the status quo, right? So great example is the children's school. Let's say you have a child who goes to one of these more expensive private schools. Well, and you are on a tuition installment plan, payment plan every month. Well, one of the things that you're going to want to make sure is that the private school tuition gets paid every month. The other thing that you're going to want to think about is living situations. You know, a lot of times people just want to, well, I won't say a lot of times, but sometimes people stay in the same house to cut down on expenses. And while it's true that maintaining two households on the same income is difficult, it's, you're not going to be able to live with your ex-spouse. And so post-divorce. And so one of the things that you really want to start doing is testing out what works, right? And that will in turn kind of tell you how much money you might need in support. Marianne, Allison, would either one of y'all like to kind of share your perspectives on getting ready financially?
Marianne, would you like to start?
Yeah, I was going to say, so in addition to the lawyer you get, the divorce coach you get, the financial person you get, we want to make sure that our team are going to be people who understand special needs and the challenges you face on a day-to-day basis, as well as what you're going to need in the future. So when you're putting things together, for instance, a parenting plan, we don't want to have, if you have a child with autism, for example, a lot of transitions. We want to see, does it make sense for the child to spend more time with one parent and maybe predictable way to spend time with the other parent, as opposed to a situation which is out there where you spend 2 days at one parent and 2 days at another. And even if you come up with a situation that works out that you want to work towards, you don't have to jump to that right away. So for instance, we have a lot of challenges with one parent maybe being a caregiver and not the other parent maybe not having had that experience. So we want to build up to the other parent perhaps getting up to speed and have the child spend more time. But to answer back to the question about the financial aspects, yeah, we want to look at what are you spending now and what are the programs and like therapies, special diets perhaps, that may not be at the forefront of maybe an attorney's mind who hasn't dealt with this kind of thing. What are the programs going forward that you want to look at in terms of maybe private school, maybe post-high school, and then living situations? So this, I come at this as a special needs divorce, and not just getting through the divorce and then be done and think about the future later. It's really a life care plan to figure out what are the needs of that child and how can we make sure those needs will be addressed as part of the discussions in the divorce.
And one of the things, and you hit on this earlier, Marianne, is I am a big fan of not making huge financial decisions, any big decisions, any life altering and changes, big ones. I would say don't do it. Don't decide I'm going to just go jump out there and buy a house. Or so maybe you rent for a year or 6 months while you pick up the pieces and figure out what's going on. You have time later to buy a house or upgrade your car or any of these big, big expenses. So that's one thing, because a lot of the times when you make big financial decisions, when you are in emotional distress, they are financial decisions that you regret later and they're hard to undo. So that would definitely be one thing that I would say. And a lot of times when we work with families, we're doing what we call a future care cost estimate. So you're talking about current expenses and things, and you kind of hit on the future. The future care cost estimates matter as well. A lot of our kids with disabilities are going to have care needs for the rest of their life. Some of them will never be able to live alone. Some of them can't be left alone. There are expensive schools, expensive caregiver expenses, and things like that that all need to be taken into consideration. And so I think that those are important factors to be looking at. And sometimes, again, we can't see the forest for the trees, but you got to be able to look instead of right here, right now, what's in front of me, of long term. Because when I think about our kids with disabilities, I think this is the marathon, not the sprints. This is the long haul. If you've got a kid that is going to have care needs for the rest of their life, they don't graduate high school and sail off into the sunset, go to college, get married, and off the payroll. It doesn't work that way. So our semblance of retirement looks different. And then the other thing that I want to say, and I kind of hit on this in the beginning, and sometimes it's not, there's no choice, you know, as far as a high conflict versus let's be adults and let's work out the best interest of the child. At the end of the day, if it's litigated, if it goes to court, the judge is looking for the best interest of the child. And I would say be careful of, you know, kind of underhanded or low blows of getting CPS involved unless it's warranted, as opposed to someone trying to get an upper hand in divorce because of a custody arrangement, things like that. Judges are really hip to that and they don't like it. And so you may have never gone through a divorce before, but other people have, and judges have seen this kind of behavior all the time. And what you might think might be helping you in your custody battle, and I'm sorry if you're going through that because it's tough. It's like, hey, don't mess with my kids and nobody gets hurt. Everybody's fine. But be careful on the decisions on that. And I'm not saying that sometimes it isn't warranted. There's some cases that CPS definitely needs to be involved. There's terrible things going on. But a lot of times it's somebody just trying to get an upper hand. And Mike, you can, you know, comment on that. But those are some of the tips that I would say is if you don't take anything else away, is the emotional brain, the emotional actions versus the rational actions. When we're emotional, we react. And oftentimes it's a mistake that we want to undo. When we're rationally thinking, we respond as opposed to react, and responding is always going to be better, is my opinion. And again, it's if we're talking about financial, the calmer you stay, the less conflict there is, the cheaper this whole process is. The process is expensive. Nobody likes throwing this money down. But think about it before you're irrational, because you're taking money away from your kids, your other kids, their college educations, weddings, down payments for houses if you wanted to help in the future. You're taking away from your nest egg. And at the end of the day, the judge is going to say what's in the best interest of the child.
Allison, you're absolutely correct about that. And I tell people, you know, cortisol brains for real. So don't kid yourself. No matter how accomplished you are, no matter what a good person you are, this is going to be one of the most difficult and challenging things you go through in your whole life. And so you need to show yourself a little bit of grace. One of the things that I do to help people kind of regulate the emotional brain, so to speak, is I tell all of my clients, if you have not watched Ted Lasso, watch it. If it's been a while since you've seen Ted Lasso, watch it again, because everyone kind of thinks about, oh, the funny guy from Kansas, he's all, you know, he's all folksy. But, you know, a huge part of the subplot of that show is divorce. And, you know, you think back to the woman who owns the soccer team and she's burning it down to get back at her ex-husband. And you really just, that's the complete opposite of what you want to do. You want to put your kids first. You want to envision the best version of yourself and walk backwards from that. Reverse engineer that. And I always tell people, take the high road. There's less traffic. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's so true. And I can't tell you, you know, I would say on average, I have one or two trials or hearings a year that turn on this thing called Our Family Wizard, which is this sort of messaging service that the courts are going to require you to use or something like it. And invariably, there is one person who cannot get out of their own way. And they just write the most awful things. And, you know, when you send a text message to your co-parent, you know, I want you to think two things. One, what would my mother think if I sent this? And two, what's the judge going to think, right? Because the last thing you want to do is be the person that can't get out of their own way. And another sort of lawyerly wisdom, if you will, is that attorney's fees are a tax on two things, complexity and human dysfunction. And guess what? You don't have to be the dysfunctional person. It just takes one to tango in that. And with special needs cases, you're going to have enough complexity, right? And so the Allison and Marianne are absolutely correct. Do what you can to regulate yourself emotionally. And the other thing that I tell people who are involved in a high conflict case or on the verge of a case becoming high conflict, is there's a book I cannot recommend enough called When Divorce Fails, by a gentleman by the name of Arthur Leonoff. Dr. Leonoff is a psychotherapist in Toronto. So the family court system is a little bit different in Canada, but he has one of the best, I think, working theories about how cases become high conflict. And basically it's this: someone, doesn't matter who, goes through life and eventually they are confronted with an adversity, right? Maybe their parents didn't treat them very well as a child. Maybe they had a challenging situation at school or early on in their career. But there's something about that creates this adversity, and it creates almost a disillusionment in life. And then they kind of go forward in life and they meet their spouse to be, right? And there's just something about the assortive mating process where people either consciously or subconsciously seek out someone to help them deal with that first disillusionment. And then when the divorce happens, you have the disillusionment of the marriage ending dovetailing with the prior disillusionment in life. And because either consciously or subconsciously, the two are related, sometimes you are just driven mad by these demons, and really what they are, they're emotional blind spots. And I would encourage you to read this book because it will help provide a roadmap. It provides a roadmap on how divorces become high conflict. And if you know how they become high conflict, that gives you the ability to reverse engineer and change what goes into that process. So you don't have those psychological or those emotional blind spots baked into what is already not a fun process. Because to go back to what Marianne and Allison were saying about divorce being expensive is that I'm under no illusions that I'm probably about the least fun person to spend money on, right? Everyone loves to spend money on a wedding, let's say. But don't kid yourself. Divorce, not only is it challenging emotionally, but it is one of the most important financial decisions you're going to make. And sometimes, especially if the divorce is more on the amicable side, sometimes it's estate planning by other means, right? And that's something that's very, very important, is because you and your soon-to-be ex-spouse or co-parent, you're going to have to be on the same page about how the children are taken care of, in particular the children with disabilities, because that's where what we call the alternative dispute resolution process comes to fruition. And the first thing is mediation. Right.
Mike, I want to comment for a second.
Yeah, please.
One of the first things that I think about is, so even if you quote unquote, and we're not supposed to use the word hate the other person, the person that you're divorcing now that you once loved, we can agree that we love our child, and doing what's in the best interest of the child and trying to put aside some of that hatred that you're feeling or anger that you're feeling of the other person is really, really important. And the other thing that I would say is be careful what you say, be careful what you type, be careful what you text. If I were you and you're going through a divorce, I'd take down your social medias.
I wouldn't erase it. I would just stop it. Because if you erase your Facebook profile, right, you could get in trouble with the courts for that.
But right, just not because, putting anything out there. The stuff that you have on social media can and will be used against you in a court of law if you go to trial on your divorce. So thinking about those things and being careful about the things that you post on those types of things, I think is really, really important. And it's possible. So mediation is such a great option. But, you know, sometimes there is a narcissistic personality disorder of one of the parents. And sometimes mediation is absolutely not on the table. Like, it's out the window. There's no chance that it's happening. I've seen a few cases a year like that. But if you can come together, and when I think about mediation, I think, Mike, the law is the law. So if you're in a 50-50 state, whatever your law is in your state, the law is the law is the law. Now, when it comes to special needs, there may be some things like unequal distributions or other things because of higher care. I mean, there's some things, and I'm sure you'll talk about those, Mike. But remember all of this fighting, and it's costing so much money, but the law still remains the law. So, you know, at the end of the day, so you can end up doing all of this fighting and it doesn't really change what the law is basically what I'm saying. So Mike, talk to us about mediation and best practices with that.
Sure. So mediation is a process where you're in a room with your lawyer. A lot of times it's via Zoom, but a lot of times it's in person. Your spouse or co-parent and his or her lawyer are in the other room. And then the mediator goes back and forth between the rooms to kind of help facilitate a resolution. And a mediation is generally speaking, extremely successful in getting a settlement, right? I mean, it's got about around a 90% chance of success, right? And so the one thing I'll say about mediation is that you need to be prepared, right? You can't just wing it. And so one of the things, for example, that you'll really want to do, and especially in preparing for a mediation on final, when you're trying to have the final settlement of the divorce, is you're going to want to already have a special needs estate planning lawyer whom you've consulted with. Perhaps they've prepared at least a first-party Medicaid payback trust, because if you're interviewing lawyers and you're asking the lawyer, well, hey, I have a child with special needs. Is there anything unique about child support about that? And they're like, yeah, no, it's basically the same. Or, well, you know, I don't know. I'll look into that. That's kind of a red flag, right? Because one of the main differences about child support with children with special needs is, one, if you get a finding of an adult disabled child, then the child support doesn't end at 18 and graduating from high school. But two, once the child turns 18, you should have them, if you want to maximize your opportunities for governmental benefits, you need to have the money paid into what's called a first party Medicaid payback trust, right? Sometimes people just call them special needs trusts for short, but there are a wide variety of special needs trusts out there, and not all of them need to pay money back to Medicaid. It's just the child support that really needs to get paid back to Medicaid. But if you do not have that, it can be real problematic. It could be really problematic.
Mike, we see this all the time, and this goes back to your situation is specialized. You should work with a specialist. So if you haven't selected an attorney, poking around for the attorneys in your area, clearly Mike Day is one for the greater Houston area that is specialized in divorce. You want to work with one that knows what they're doing. And what I would say is a lot of attorneys dabble in that just enough to mess you up. Your child support doesn't go to a special needs trust. Now you got to go back to the well and get it done again. It's so much better to get things set up properly on the front end than going back. And another point that I would like to make here is if it's likely that the child is going to need guardianship in the future, kind of discussing how that's going to go down in the future in your documents. So maybe they're 12 right now, but it's likely it's going to happen. Like discussing what we agree on for that in the future will prevent having to go back to the well. Every time you go back to the well, it costs more money. So, thinking through some of these things is really important. And the child support matters. You might say, well, what does the child support going to me have to do with my child and getting SSI and Medicaid? It's everything, because it's based, even though it's going to you for the benefit of said child, even after they turn 18, it's counted as income to the child as it relates to these programs. And so that's why it matters. And your traditional attorney that doesn't have a background with special needs doesn't necessarily know that. So it's really, really important. So there's a couple of questions that we have in the chat box that I was going to mention. So
just mention real quick, I think it's been alluded to, but just in Texas, as Mike mentioned, you can get indefinite, meaning lifelong child support if your child is not able to take care of themselves in the future. And you can get what they call above guideline child support as well. So it may not just be the formula. So depending on your income and resource levels, it may be an amount above that. And as Allison mentioned, it may be a disproportionate share of the assets and different ways to fund that. So people are concerned about how we're going to support our child. There's different ways to do that.
And what I see in the people that have hired attorneys that don't have any background in special needs, none of that stuff happens is what I see pretty consistently. And then you end up having to go back. So we have a person that's basically in a high conflict divorce. They have no family or additional care supports in the geographic area. And they're trying to see if they can't get the geographic restrictions lifted to move to have better support, healthcare, employment opportunities, etc. And I know that we see this sometimes. You know, sometimes somebody gets divorced and they're from another state and all of their family's in another state and they want to get permission to move to another state. Do you have any suggestions for families that might be in that situation?
Yeah, I do. Just generally speaking, courts, on one hand, they're wanting to put the best interest of the child first, right? But I mean, I will say that Texas, more than just about any other state in America, is oriented towards giving the parents pretty close to equal time. And so if you don't negotiate a broad geographic restriction on the front end, if something changes, right? I mean, maybe you did have that support group and now you don't, right? You can always go back to the court and modify it. There are sort of procedural considerations. I won't get into all of that because I don't want to get too much into the weeds. But just know the thing that I think is probably the most powerful is that this is one of the few areas in family law where you can take the power away from the judge. Because if you file a jury demand, right, because Texas is one of like three states in America where you still have juries in a family court system. And one of those things is the geographic restriction. And so if the person who posted the question wanted to just educate themselves, right, they would want to Google a case called Lenz versus Lenz, and that's spelled L-E-N-Z versus V, L-E-N-Z. And that was a case where mom and dad got divorced. They lived in Bexar County. Mom had agreed to stay in Bexar County. Well, mom was German, and she wanted to move to Germany. And so the judge wouldn't let her move to Germany on temporary orders, right? And that goes back to the notion of temporary orders about status quo. They are about, you know, there's a lot of fast thinking in family law. There's a lot of rules of thumb. And sometimes it's hard if you're trying to litigate something, sometimes it's really hard to get a creative solution fashioned by a judge. And so the judge wouldn't let her move to Germany while the case was pending. So she took it to a jury, and the jury said, you know what? Mom can move to Germany with the kids, even though the dad still lives here. Well, the judge didn't like that. And the judge said, you know what? I don't think so. I don't care what the jury did. You don't get to move to Germany. Well, this is one of the few times really ever in Texas law where the judge cannot second guess the jury. And it's this issue. And it's really interesting. And it went all the way up to the Texas Supreme Court, which is why I told you to Google it, because you'll have what are called the Lenz factors that go into all the different standards that a court or potentially a jury are supposed to consider if you want to relocate. And so that would probably be a good starting point. The other thing I want to kind of echo is that, yeah, family law, special needs, it's a niche. But that is equally, if not more true, for the estate planning bar. You do not want to get even a board certified estate planning lawyer. You don't want to just get someone who does not focus on special needs. I could probably count on maybe two hands, maybe a touch more of lawyers of law firms in the Houston area that I would feel comfortable referring a special needs estate planning matter. Houston's a pretty big place, and I'm pretty involved in the bar. I know a lot of these lawyers, and I'd be hard, like I said, I'd be hard pressed to go much above two hands, right? So that says.
So Mike, I want to comment on that because I want to make something clear that sometimes that's confusing to people. When you're going through a divorce, you needed a divorce attorney, but setting up that special needs trust and guardianship and the wills and all that kind of stuff, that is the estate planning attorney. We have list of what we would consider really qualified attorneys that are nuanced and special needs as it relates to your estate planning documents. And that's another specialist that you don't want to skimp on, to Mike's point. But when you're going through this, if you need to set up a special needs trust and you need to go through divorce, that's two separate attorneys. You got to know that. Mike and Mike's type of attorneys don't set up those estate planning documents, and those estate planning attorneys do not do divorce. And so that is unfortunate, and an unfortunate expense, but you do need to know that it is two separate things. And so, Mike, I know we've got a couple of questions for Hidalgo County and also Corpus Christi. Do you work all across the state?
And I do, and I just want to point something out in particular in Hidalgo County, because it's one of the most interesting special needs cases that's been litigated in the last 15 years came out of the Valley. And that was a case where the child had been adjudicated as an adult disabled child in the underlying divorce. The child had graduated from high school, was getting ready to graduate from college, and if I recall correctly, start graduate school. And the father who was paying the child support is like, come on, this kid's going to go to grad school. This kid could get a job. I don't want to pay child support anymore. Well, you know, the facts of each case are unique, right? But in this case, the father lost. And the trial court judge down in the valley said, you still have to pay child support. So he appealed it up to the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals. And the Corpus Christi court said, you know, trial court didn't do anything wrong, or certainly nothing wrong enough to justify us reversing the case. So you still have to pay child support. Then the dad took it up to the Texas Supreme Court. And the Texas Supreme Court didn't take the case. However, she's no longer on the court, but Eva Guzman, who was one of, I don't know, maybe four former family court judges to ever in the history of the Texas Supreme Court serve on the Texas Supreme Court. She wrote sort of a brief two-page opinion that said, we're not going to take this case, but there are a lot of nuances here and there are a lot of unresolved questions. And, you know, one of these days we should really weigh in on this. We're just not going to do it with this case, which I thought was so interesting. And then someone's got a question about lifetime support. Well, you know, just know that each case is different. And it's really about, at the end of the day, it's really about the best interest of the child. Especially when it comes to child support, courts are, you know, well, on one hand, they're not interested in lifestyle maintenance, but on the other hand, they are driven by what the child needs. And for that matter, you know, Texas is not New York or California, right? You're not going to get alimony to kind of keep you in this lifestyle you're accustomed to. However, there is something called spousal maintenance. And it's sort of like Texas's version of alimony. The thing is, it's not about lifestyle. It's about, quote unquote, reasonable minimal needs. And as you're interviewing lawyers, one of the things you want to say is like, look, I think we might have an estate of around $200,000 to $300,000. Like, does that mean I'm disqualified from getting spousal maintenance? And a lot of lawyers will tell you that you probably are. And I would be very cautious with that lawyer, because that is not what the case law says. And in particular, in the last 4 years, there have been some cases that, you know, people have gotten 350. I'm aware of one case, which was kind of an extraordinary case, but they got as much as $750,000 in the divorce settlement, and the person still qualified for spousal maintenance. So just be mindful of that. And Marianne, how does this look from the divorce coach perspective?
Yeah, so one thing I want to share, and I'm not going to give any legal advice here because this can be a touchy topic, is some people are the understanding if it's 50-50 custody and possession, that there's not going to be child support involved. And that's not the case. There's a lot of factors that are looked at, as Mike mentioned, and one is going to be the earning potential and ability of one's ex-spouse versus the other. So really looking at what's in the best interest of that child, is it better for maybe a higher income individual to work more and have less time and provide for that child, or is it better to do another type of arrangement? So you may have one parent who has had more of the caregiving responsibility and given up income. So you have to balance this. It becomes a very delicate situation. And so not to say that both parents can't take care of the child and they can't have 50-50, I would just have people kind of consider what are the motives and what's really in the best interest of the child.
Yeah. And I would just add one other thing to that, which is this, is that, you know, like we've discussed about a lot of times, you know, child support is going to end at 18. Well, with children who are adjudicated adult disabled children, effectively children who can't take care of themselves because of something that was known about the child prior to the child turning 18. That child support obligation is an obligation that survives the obligor's death, right? It's an obligation of the estate. And in 2021, Congress passed a new law called the Secure Act. And for the first time, it allowed special needs trusts to be funded by retirement accounts. So 401ks, 403bs, that sort of thing. And so as you're interviewing special needs estate planning lawyers, that's something else that you should ask. And if the lawyer that you're talking to on the family law was like, yeah, sure, I know the Secure Act, I'll draft that trust for you, be careful. Be very, very careful. It's like saying, oh yeah, I can be your surgeon and your anesthesiologist. I'll do
Just
both.
email us and we'll send you a list of attorneys that we know are okay on that. So it is really, really important. Another question, and I know we've got about 10 minutes left today. What happens if my son is 17? Do I have to reapply for child support when he's 18? And I guess that depends on what your original decree says and whether or not child support continues post age 18. Is that right, Mike?
That is exactly right. You know, you got to look to see what the findings are in the underlying divorce decree and whether or not you need to hurry and start the litigation process. And, you know, and that's such a typical lawyer answer, right? It depends, but it's so true because especially if you have a divorce decree from 10, 15 years ago, some of the laws have changed, in particular, making sure, you know, expressly authorizing that child support can be paid into a trust, right? Because at one point in time, that was probably not available. So, you know, a lot to consider.
I want to mention a roadblock that we've seen that caused big issues for a family. For anybody that has a VA pension or a military pension and they've named their child outright as a successor beneficiary upon death, the law changed in 2015 under the National Defense Act, Howard Beck McKeon law. And it made it to where that those military pensions can go to a first party special needs trust. Before it couldn't. So if anybody on here is military or has that military pension, that might be a factor in the future. I want to make sure that you know that because we had a family a few years ago and the dad died in a Black Hawk crash and it was a disaster. And the child had severe special needs, like full care 24/7. And we got it unwound, but it took a long time and a lot of attorneys and it was very expensive. So things like that, these are examples of why it's so critically important to work with a specialist when you're going through this. And then Marianne, I want you to chime in and we'll go to the next slide. You know, I know that we do future care cost estimates. What does that look like? And we do small, medium, large. What if they need some care? What if they need full care? What if it's a combination of both? We're going to provide housing and maybe an attendant, but they can do some things on their own. And so we can do those future care cost estimates, small, medium, and large. But I also know, and it's kind of harder to find these throughout the US, but there are caregiving organizations that are staffed with RNs and physicians that will also report to the courts what, because of the diagnoses that the child has, what the lifetime care looks like. What kind of level of care is this individual going to need? Can you just comment on that really quickly, Marianne?
Yeah, so there are life care specialists out there. I can tell you from my experience, those were hard to find. So working with people like you, working with other organizations, and even getting reports from mental health professionals. What does this child need in terms of ongoing support? I think that plays a big part too. But one thing I want to share, you know, sometimes when the child is young, it's hard to know what that child is going to look like in the future, whether they're going to need that lifetime support. So some parents may choose to say, okay, well, we'll revisit it at age 18. One thing I would one thing I've seen in the past is that if there's not some kind of mention of special needs or disability in the divorce documents, you may have a harder time when you go back to modify if that's not already in there. The judge may say, well, this wasn't you mentioned. No, it's not, you know, may not happen. So I would just, so if you are going to wait, take that approach, which I don't recommend necessarily depending on your situation, but if you are going to take that approach, just wait and see what the child is going to need and their abilities when they're an adult, then be sure to at least document and have some information about the disability in your discussions.
It goes back to getting it right the first time and making careful, deliberate, intentional decisions with the information that you have sought out and asked questions instead of making haphazard, quick, fast, and in a hurry decisions on who you hire and what you do and that kind of thing. So that goes true. We have a question. I want to answer this one. I want Mike to answer this. When calculating for a modification of support for long-term care beyond 18, what are tools for uncompensated care when nursing can not be staffed, even when insurance coverage, but there's no access? You know, there's been an issue of caregivers since COVID. It was happening before COVID, but it got worse and it really hasn't got better since COVID. and we got people that have staffing hours, but they can't get it staffed. As far as those, how do you calculate that?
Well, a few thoughts. I mean, you would, in terms of calculating it, like from an evidence standpoint, you would just find out what it costs to fully staff it, and then I would just present that to the court, because I would think that, like, look, the child needs full staffing. If the obligor is going to come back and say, well, but you don't get the staffing all the time, if that's not the fault of the primary caregiver, I don't think the court's going to care. I think the court's going to say the child needs it. Look, if for some reason you can't always attend to it, I'm still going to consider it. That's one of the really interesting things about the adult disabled child support statute, is that the law expressly authorizes the consideration of future needs, right? Which is not the case for child support for a child who does not have special needs, who doesn't meet that statutory standard. So just be mind, in a sense, it almost is like, it can be, sometimes it can be kind of like a personal injury case where you're putting together a life care plan. You definitely have that component. The only other thing I'll say is that you might, when you're talking to lawyers, you might want to ask them, how often they work with experts, because there are a lot of nuances about experts in family court. There's a Texas Supreme Court case that just came out in May that a lot of family law attorneys don't know about, and it's about getting the record, the mental health records of a party and a non-party. And I, a couple of weeks ago, I did a panel with a fabulous family court judge, and a wonderful, in fact, I mean, the panel was top-notch. It was a Randy Wilson from the 14th Court of Appeals, a federal judge by the name of Andrew Edison, and a Judge Janice Berg. And we talked about some of these brand new cases that have come out about mental health experts in particular. But in addition to these new cases that have come out in the last year or so, there are some real nuances in the family code about how to deal with mental health experts. And that's just, when you're interviewing lawyers, that's probably another question to put on your list.
Good. So I see this, and we just got like 3 minutes left, this supporting children through the process. And I love this because one of the things I think, and I'm not saying this in a rude way, but let's not mess our kids up, folks. They love the mom and they love dad, and that's what they're supposed to do. And it's tempting to, say ugly things about the other person, and you might feel that, but save those ugly things up for your friend, not the kid. And try to harbor a good, healthy relationship with the other parent. And hopefully, and not always, but hopefully that'll reciprocate. I mean, they're our kids. The kids love us and they should. And it's really, really important. And one thing else I wanted to talk about here is there is something called divorce care, and there is groups for parents, and there is something called Divorce Care for Kids, DC4K. They're all across the United States. It is a Christian-based organization, so some people may not be, and that's okay. But their programs are really good and they're really healthy. And it's nice for the kids to know that they're not alone because they're around other kids that are going through the same thing. So I just wanted to mention that in case nobody knew about those. So tell us about other ways that we can support.
Yes, I appreciate you mentioning that, Allison. It's a great resource. I found that my kids weren't going to be a good fit. The church I was doing that said we don't really work with special needs, in our case. And so it became up to me to figure out how to support my kids through the process to help them emotionally and to help them cope with the transition. So I developed a social story for them to explain divorce, what was happening to our family, what they could expect. That's really what kids want to know. Is what's happening, what can I expect, and where will I be which day? And then make sure that they're loved, right? And so on my YouTube channel, you can actually find how I created my social story. So you're welcome to check that out, and I can help you create one for your family if you would like. But we want to, if you know the transition is coming, kind of ease them into that as opposed to everything happening all at once. Our kids are always listening and learning from us, and we're their role model during this. So always remember that. Even though they may not be verbal, they can understand and hear everything that you're saying and even understand the emotions and tone that perhaps are being exhibited. And also having a calendar is helpful so they can know, as mentioned, where they're going to be and when, as opposed to being anxious about where they're going to be the next day and what's going to be happening and what their day looks like. We definitely, as I mentioned, keep the kids out of the conflict. Don't have the conversations in front of them to your lawyer or to your ex-spouse or soon-to-be ex-spouse. And this is a opportunity to bring in not just yourselves. You can have mental health professionals. You can involve the school, let them know what's happening. So if they see some behavior issues, they can understand why little Johnny may be keeping to himself or hitting or whatever it might be. So definitely know that you're not alone. And there's people out there to help you and your kids to get through it. And a lot of times people are hesitant about divorce, but it's better to be in separate homes and not have the conflict and have the child see that on a day-to-day basis and impact that way as well.
I think the mental health professionals are important, especially in the younger aged kids and things like that, because sometimes it's true that sometimes traumas in childhood cause later bipolar, borderline personality disorder, other things. And some of our kids with disabilities have a predisposition for anxiety and depression and self-harm and all of the other things that come with what I call typical teenage behavior, TTB. But when we have a kid with a disability, that typical teenager behavior is on steroids. And when they've gone through trauma, that's an additional layer to it. So getting the right mental health professional involved early may be able to prevent some of these future diagnoses. So everybody's going to get a copy of today's slides. This is Marianne and Mike's contact information and all the links. And they're going to get a link to the recording as well. This has been really good. And what I also want to say is Marianne and both Mike, you guys know, if you've attended our webinars before, we're not pushers of products or salesy or anything like that. We're truly here to help. But their services are available. They do consultations. So if you'd like to meet with them individually, you absolutely can, and you can reach out. Mike, as an attorney, maybe you're thinking, hey, I already hired an attorney, but I'm clear that I've hired the wrong one. That's okay. You could hire Mike as a consultant on the side that will work with your attorney to make sure that your attorney does the right thing on the special needs side of the house. So you don't have to throw him away. I just want to mention that. And then you can also reach out to Mike for the people that were asking, you know, does he work across the state? The answer is yes. And he also may, if you're like dependent that you want somebody in your area, then he may be able to also make a recommendation on that. And I know that Marianne has a ton of resources. I know I've referred multiple clients through the years to both of these guys, and the clients have always come back and said thank you. So I am thankful to have somebody that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is truly specialized as it relates to families with disabilities on this journey. So again, what I'd like to say, guys, is that we're glad you're here. We are truly sorry that you're going through what you're going through or thinking about it, but there is help for you out there. And at the end of the day, rational brain or irrational brain, emotional brain or rational brain, and we want to not lead with the emotional brain. And if you keep that, if that's the only thing you took away, you're going to save a lot of money at the end of the day. So Veronica, do we have any other questions? I know we're done for today.
I think we answer all the questions. Just a reminder, you are going to receive a survey helping with us. You are going to receive an email with all these resources, the presentation with the links and emails of Marianne and Mike and Allison and myself. So thank you so much and see you guys in the next one.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one, everyone.
Bye. Bye.